And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is things impacting business and our daily lives. My first guest is a crisis management expert and an attorney. He explained what changes we can expect to see in business as a result of WikiLeaks. My next guest is an international expert on the strategic impact of information technology on innovation, marketing, and talent. We're going to discuss macro changes in business that will reboot business around the world from his latest book titled Macro Wikinomics. If you want to join in the conversation, or if you have a question, you can always call us at 639-0008. Don Tapscott is one of the world's leading authorities on business strategy and how information technology changes business, government, and society. Don is the chairman of Ingenera Insight, and he directs several of the research projects and education programs there. He's the founder and chairman of the international think tank New Paradigm before its acquisition by Ingenera. Thinkers 50 recently named Don as one of the 50 most influential living management thinkers in the world. I mean, that's quite an accomplishment right there. He's a fellow at the World Economic Forum, an adjunct professor at the Joseph Rotman School of Management at the University of Toronto. He's the author of over 13 books, many of which I own in my library. He has a Bachelor of Science in Psychology and Statistics, a Master's of Education in Research Methodology, and 3 Doctor of Law degrees granted from the University of Alberta, Trent University, and McMaster's University, respectively. Welcome to the show, Don. How are you today?
I'm great, Billy. It's great to be here, as it were.
Well, we're glad to have you as a guest because you are truly a thought leader, and I love to interview thought leaders in business. Now, in your 2007 best-selling book, Weeconomics, which I own, you wrote about mass collaboration and the way that it's changing business and the way we communicate, how it's creating value and competing in the global marketplace. Now, after the global meltdown of 2007 to 2009, the principles of Wikinomics have become even more powerful than ever. Why is that so?
Well, Wikinomics was about the corporation, and it argued that the Internet is not just about websites or eyeballs or stickiness or page views or dot-coms or anything like that, but it was really becoming a sort of global platform for collaboration. And that was leading to some really big changes in how we get capability, really, to innovate goods and services and to create wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember the moment, Billy, I was in Brussels speaking to a group called Cyboss with 7,000 bankers in September a couple of years ago. And it was a couple of days after Lehman Brothers had crashed.
Wow.
And the whole world was crashing. I looked out at the sea of sort of deer in the headlights, and I thought, wow, there's something going on here, and you don't know what it is. And it occurred to me that this is not just going to be an economic slump or some kind of global meltdown, that we're at a turning point in history here where many of the institutions that have served us well for decades or even centuries are going to get frozen. They're going to stall. The whole global economy is going to come into a big long-term slump. And people are going to start to understand that the economy is finally kind of run out of gas, as it were, that and that we need to rebuild everything, almost everything, from our newspapers, our old models of government, our healthcare. I mean, the university is losing its monopoly on higher education. We've got to rethink science, our systems for global problem solving, our energy grid, you name it. And we've got to rebuild these for a whole new digital age. And that this will be a time of great peril and danger, but also of great opportunity.
Well, you talk about this being a real turning point in human history, and I like that analogy. I think back to the other great turning point in human history, and you write about this in your book. 300 years ago, Martin Luther called the printing press God's highest act of grace. Are you saying that the changes that we're seeing right now because of the Internet are on par with the changes that the world saw as a result of the printing press?
Well, I am. I don't think it's an overstatement. You know, I was speaking recently at a conference somewhere. Where was it? In Berlin. in Berlin, and Paul Krugman was there as well, and you know, the writes the New York Times, controversial guy.
Absolutely, yeah, very liberal economist out there. Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that when you have a financial services industry meltdown like this, when you move into a couple of decades of slump, Japan had one in 92, they're still in a slump. So his view is get ready for a couple of decades of real ugliness. Now, far be it from me to debate a Nobel Prize-winning economist, but my view is that the future is not something to be predicted, it's something to be achieved. And we can achieve a different future if we want, but to do that, we need to understand what the problem is. And the problem doesn't fall within the realm of traditional economists. You know, should we have more fiscal stimulus or something like that? This is a cyclical kind of change. It's a sec. And to your point, and with respect to Krugman, I don't think you go back to 91 or 82 or even the Great Depression. You need to go back a few hundred years to see something similar. And back then, all around the world, we had agrarian societies, and the economic system was called feudalism. And people didn't have knowledge. Knowledge was concentrated in a tiny oligopoly. But when Johannes Gutenberg came up with his great invention, over time, people started to have knowledge, and all of a sudden, the institutions of feudal society started to appear to be stalled or in atrophy or failure. It didn't make sense for the church to be responsible for medicine. When people had knowledge, it didn't make sense for a bunch of kings and nobles to be running everything. So you had, as you pointed out, the Reformation, Martin Luther, you had the rise of parliamentary democracy, the creation of science, the university, the corporation, capitalism, the Industrial Revolution eventually, and it was all good. But now, once again, the technology genie has escaped from the bottle, and only this time it's really different. It's the printing press gave us access to the written word. Now everyone can be a publisher. The printing press gave us access to recorded knowledge. With the web, all of a sudden we have access to the knowledge contained in the cranium of people all around the world on a global basis. So this is leading us into a whole new age.
And I like what you have to say, both here on our interview and in your book, Macroeconomics, Don Tapscott, that you're generally very optimistic about that. So let's review some of the important points of what Weeconomics is. What are the five pillars that really support Weeconomics in the world marketplace today?
Well, to rebuild all these institutions, we need to build them around five new principles. The first is collaboration. And by that, I'm not referring to a bunch of people sitting around in a room having a nice meeting. I'm referring to collaboration that can occur on an astronomical scale, where peers can now come together inside companies acting as peers rather than as superiors and subordinates in a supply chain, or peers outside the boundaries of traditional companies, you know, Wikipedia, Linux. And social networking is becoming social production. The internet's not about websites, it's a new mode of production. So collaboration is about how you find gold and how Procter & Gamble discovers a new molecule, and it's how Local Motors designs and manufactures automobiles, and it's about how the Boeing built the 787 Dreamliner. That's the first one.
Yeah, which isn't going so well, by the way, Don, but that's another story for another time.
A good point, Billy, but they've had some delays and problems. But the CEO of Boeing said recently, look, the old approach will never be used. You know, we had a few glitches to work on this one, but Boeing, the old approach was that you have a 20,000-page spec, and you put it out to your suppliers, and you beat up on them, and they provide all this stuff, and you put all this aircraft together. Boeing said, well, no, you're not suppliers, you're peers. You create important things like the engine, the fuselage, the electronics, the entertainment systems. And rather than a 20,000-page spec, we're going to give you a 15-page document describing what we're trying to achieve, and we're going to co-create this aircraft. And there were some problems, but the thing is coming out, and the result is pretty spectacular. I mean, when you're flying at 35,000 feet, it'll actually affect your body as if you're at 2,000.
Yeah, it is going to be a remarkable plane, no question
about
it.
And it has more back orders than any aircraft in history. So.
Now, do you think Alan Mulcahy's transfer from Boeing over to Ford is going to have the same sort of an impact on Ford? Will we see the same collaboration there?
Well, there's a lot of interesting stuff coming out of Ford right now. One of them getting to our second principle, which is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he stood up and he said a couple of months ago, you know, Ford, we're going to make a big turn. Now we're going to start building cars that people actually need and want. And, you know, that he's being incredibly open. And yet you have to be. I mean, everyone's all bent out of shape about WikiLeaks, and you were just talking about that. But this is just the iceberg. We have a new age of transparency here, and every company is going to be naked. So you might as well be like Alan and open up, open the kimono, tell the truth, have integrity.
All right, so collaboration and openness. I'm just worried about the timing here, Don. So
yeah,
those
sure.
are the first two pillars.
Well, very, very quickly, sharing intellectual property. And again, this is not about socialism. It's about deciding what of your IP you want to share within your business network and also that you may place in the commons, like IBM giving away $400,000 of software to Linux. That helped them defeat Microsoft, and it resulted in several multi-billion dollar businesses for them. The fourth is in interdependence. If the financial crisis shows us everything, it's that business can't succeed in a world that's failing. And the fifth is integrity.
All right. So, are the five pillars: collaboration, openness, or transparency, sharing, integrity, and interdependence. Now, we're talking to Don Tapscott, everybody, author of the book Macroeconomics. That's all very theoretical at this point. For some of my listeners who are looking to put the rubber to the road, let me ask you, give us some examples. And because I'm in the media, let's start with the media, and let's start with one of my favorite mediums that's starting to go away, that is newspapers. Talk to us about how this affects newspapers and maybe compare the New York Times to the Huffington Post.
Well, all newspapers will, the old model of the newspaper, they will go away. 70 have gone bankrupt in the last decade in the U.S. alone. We're on this New York Times death watch list. How much longer can it service its debt? And there's some pretty high stakes here. Now, how do we inform ourselves as a society of good journalism, investigative reporting, pay for journalism, avoid balkanization, where we all end up in these little self-reinforcing echo chambers, listening only to view that gives us comfort, which is one of the reasons I like your show, by the way, is it's a thoughtful show, but that's becoming a rarer thing.
Well, thank you.
So what do we do about newspapers? Well, there are new models emerging. The Huffington Post is a step in the right direction, but it's not the answer. It's a step in the right direction in terms of its success. It's 10 times bigger than the New York Times. I write for the Huffington Post. If you go there right now, you can see my most recent article. I'm doing a cover story series right now.
Wow.
But the problem with the Huff is that it doesn't pay journalists. So there's a new model emerging, and, you know, very, very quickly, call it the network news. It's sort of like a virtual newspaper. People, your listeners, if you think about bloggers, you may conjure up a certain image, but 28% of bloggers do it for commercial reasons, and half of them make a full-time living. And of that group, 14%, 80% of them have university degrees, 40% have graduate degrees, and two-thirds of them are former journalists. So these are real serious journalists.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we bring them together into a great big network? And you got your sports bloggers and your economics bloggers and your political bloggers. We'll hire someone to be the accountant to divvy up the money, a bunch of people to sell advertising revenue. And all of a sudden, you've got the equivalent of the New York Times. Initially, not of the same quality, but there's no reason why we couldn't move to that.
Well, let me challenge you on that part, Don, because I hear what you're saying. These talented bloggers are out there. They certainly have the credentials to write. However, what a newspaper brings to the party is not so much the writers or even the advertising. It's the editors who edit and present a certain point of view. And in the networked world, we lose that filter. We lose the editors who separate the good articles from the bad articles, the wheat from the chaff. How do we address that fundamental problem?
Well, actually, the really good writers, their stuff is not edited much. And there's no reason why you can't have great editors as part of a networked environment. Just like there's no reason, you know, one thing the editors do, and I saw this just about a month ago. I sat in on the page one meeting for the New York Times where they sat there for 45 minutes deciding what was going to go on the cover. And I was quite humbled that this is a very important thing. You got 10 people sitting around deciding what's important to the country right now. And you need to have that kind of function, but there's no reason why that could into a network model.
Okay, I mean, that makes sense, and I like what you have to say, because I want to see good, solid news reporting to continue on, so that is good. We're talking to Don Tapscott, everybody, author of the book Macroeconomics. We're talking about media, and let's continue down this road a little bit. Talk about television and we're run out of time, Don. I've just looked up at the clock. This is such a captivating, interesting story. We'll have to have you back on the show at some future point. We're talking to Don Tapscott, author of the book Macroeconomics. Don, if people want to learn more about you, if they want to read your articles, you mentioned the Huffington Post. Where else would you direct them to go on the internet?
Well, on Twitter, I'm @dtapscott, and macroeconomics.com, the big discussion is underway.
All right, Don, that is great. Thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We will talk to you down the road.
Okay, thanks, Billy.
Thank you.